Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome again to the Steve Jones Show. Steve joining us from the Sunbury Motors studio shortly. Sunbury Motors. You'll find them North 4th Street, Sunbury, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Yesterday we spent a lot of the day talking about whether the Phillies would be buyers or sellers in the next couple of, weeks, we'll call it. Also didn't really address what I think is one of the major issues with the Phillies, and that's the man at the helm of making those decisions, is Ruben Amaro. I mean, you look at the players that the Phillies have. We talked about the Phillies having one of the biggest payrolls in Major League Baseball and having the worst record in the National League, and the only team really that has a worse record than they do in Major League Baseball is Tampa Bay, and they don't charge near as much.
They did this to torment people like you.
It's worked very, very well. I mean, I'm glad very they kept effective. Some of the players that they did. It would be nice to see if they perform. But I just don't see the Phillies being too much of a seller right now, and being able to
seller. They have to sell.
You can't sell what you don't have. That's the problem.
Well, they have Utley, and they got some other guys. Sell it.
Papelbon and Utley is probably the only two players that are right now at a price range that anybody would be interested in.
Mm. Yeah.
And then, of course, Utley has the no-trade clause, but, if he goes out to the West Coast, which is where he's from, that's a very good possibility. He would want to finish his career closer to home.
Right. Well,
I don't see a massive sell-off. When you talk about a team being sellers, I think of a team being sellers where they're selling everything, everybody, all the time, and just bringing up a whole bunch of AAA players to finish the season. I don't see a house cleaning sale for the Phillies. I don't know who would be in the market to pay some of the prices for some of the players that they have.
Right.
Now, do I want to see the Phillies change a direction? Yeah. I would love to see a direction change there. I would like to see a direction change in the management right now in Philadelphia. I think that's where you have to, and I think, I don't know, we kind of talked about this after the show. I personally think that has to start before you start selling off players. Let the guy who's going, or the woman or whoever that's going to take over make those decisions about the team's future. Don't stick him or her in a position that makes it worse.
Right. I think that they took chances on the productivity of their older players. And in the market at the moment, it made sense. How about that?
Yeah, in the market I don't disagree with that.
Of the moment, okay? But that's the market of the moment. I think what you now have to have is a change in philosophy. You have to be selective as to how you do this. Let's take the world champions. Okay, the world champions, of course, are the Red Sox. They had a massive change in philosophy. Okay. And it paid off for them last year. They won. So it paid off. Well, the philosophy then continued into this year, and Jacoby Ellsbury ended up not, you know, ended up not re-signing with the Red Sox. He signed with the Yankees. And I think the Yankees, if I recall correctly, and correct me on this, a seven-year contract, does that sound right?
I don't remember for sure.
The Red Sox went 7 years with Dustin Pedroia and decided they were not going to go 7 years on Jacoby Ellsbury, which is fine. That's their decision as to what they're going to do. Okay? All right. I understand that. Now, it's going to cost them a bit over time for the simple reason that Jackie Bradley Jr. is not ready to play every day in the major leagues. Defensively, he probably can, but offensively, he cannot. It really is that simple. So they've had a massive downgrade in the outfield because of that. And it's also been a downgrade in the team. The guy that jump-started the top of your order, the speed in your lineup, the guy that stole bases for you, occasionally could hit with a little bit of power and could run down everything in center field, is not your guy out there. He's the Yankees guy now. So you take risks. When you go through this, and the Phillies took risks that Jimmy Rollins was going to continue to be a productive player over a long period of time. He's been good, but he hasn't been great, in my opinion. Chase Utley took a chance on him, and when he plays, he's fabulous. The problem is, it's when he plays. He's been out of the lineup a lot. And you can't count on the fact that an Achilles injury is going to take Ryan Howard a year and a half to get over. You put money into Cliff Lee, you put money into Cole Hamels, and you felt like Jonathan Papelbon was your missing piece because you were missing a closer. Okay, so that's the route you went.
But yet you throw in the fact that you got a guy like Hunter Pence and then traded him for nothing.
Agreed. Totally agreed. That was
Hunter Pence deal the first time was, I'm like, wow, this is great. And then the next year is like, what?
Exactly. Because what you had at that point was you want to have Howard first, third, left, and right. Well, suddenly you got Howard at first. You got Pence in right field. I could get away with Dominic Brown in left. Third base is still a problem for you. But when they made the trade with San Francisco and they dealt away Hunter Pence, I was confused the day they made the trade. I kept looking at the prospects, and remember, I couldn't justify what they were doing.
Right.
I couldn't justify. I looked at the prospects, and I said, I don't see this. What are they seeing that I'm not seeing? And they kept going on about Tommy Joseph and so forth. I'm thinking, what do you need Tommy Joseph for? You got Chooch. You got Ruiz behind the plate. Who's, you know, I mean, and of course, he got derailed last year, too, but I'm saying, what do you need this kid for? And I've watched one catcher through the... Now, obviously, to get Roy Halladay, they gave up Darnell. And Darnell is a heck of a prospect. I like him a lot. You know, and they did it to get Roy Halladay. Well, I would have done the same thing. Okay? But the Phillies are a big market team that probably has to think like a medium market team. And they've got to do a better job in the draft, because I watch Williamsport play and I have seen very little out of Williamsport that has impressed me over the years. I'm just telling you, somebody's watched them, their initial farm guys come through for 8 years. Freddie Galvis, as you know and Roger knows, I thought he'd be a major league guy. There have been no pitchers that have rolled through there where I sat back and went, wow. Look at this guy. There have been guys that I've looked at that are in the major leagues now that when you saw him, you sat back and went, okay, player. Haven't seen that when I watched Williamsport play. Haven't seen a pitcher go through where I went, wow, there's a player for you.
You talked about the Hunter Pence deal. Look at the Hunter Pence deal the first time around from the Astros. All right. The Phillies, little did the Phillies know that they would be sending the player to be named later of Domingo Santana, who's now hitting just under 300 as a 21-year-old in AAA. When you look at this thing now in 2014, as opposed to when they made the trade in 2011, now it's a really costly trade because you don't have Hunter Pence at all, and you don't have Santana coming up as an outfield prospect.
No, but Santana's in AAA. I don't really care about that.
Well, but we talk about the fact that the Phillies minor league system is struggling a little bit, and part of it is because they've traded away any talent that they've had.
Well, okay, but they were trying to do it because they were fighting
right.
for a championship.
They were in
okay,
a hunt.
So
I understand.
That's a totally different thing. I will sacrifice that if I'm going to get Roy Halladay. I'm going to sacrifice that to get me Hunter Pence because I'm trying to win a title. And I think now it has to be graphically pointed out something I've talked about on this show how many times. The opportunities to win it are actually smaller than people realize. So when you've got a chance to go for it, roll the dice and go for it.
Well, and I understand.
Every time you play for the future, okay, we're playing for the future, we're playing for the future, we're playing the future. Guess what? The present never happens.
But you were talking about how things have backfired for the Phillies as far as signing players. It's the same thing when you look at trades. I mean, the trade backfired there with Hunter Pence because they don't even have him anymore.
Well, that was their choice to try and
right.
basically swap out,
right.
to beef up the farm system and do what you're talking about. And I'm telling you, when you get a productive major league guy, all right, unless you see something in there that's, okay, I mean, sometimes you get lucky. I mean, and I'll give you an example. The Pirates made a deal with the Red Sox. Joel Hanrahan goes to the Red Sox. Right, so far there's been nobody that's gone toward the Pirates that's helped out the Pirates at all. They're all prospects, including Pimentel, who was the linchpin of the entire thing. Okay, here's a guy that was an absolute total throw-in in the deal. All right, guess who that was?
I don't know.
Total throw-in in the deal.
I don't know.
Brock Holt. He's hitting 340 for the Red Sox. Not hitting 340 for Pawtucket. He's hitting 340 for the Red Sox. Okay? He started his career in State College. When he played here in State College, I knew that guy was moving through the Pirates system. Now, how far he gets, you don't know. But I knew he'd be a mover. He was on the All-Star. They had the one All-Star game they had here. He played in the All-Star game, the whole thing. I mean, just a really good player. They drafted him in the ninth round out of Rice. So it doesn't surprise me to see him get to the major leagues, but he was a toss-in in the deal. So sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes you get lucky. But I think that for every Xander Bogaerts that helps you down the stretch, that's through your system, that you get late, that is a difference maker for you, the vast majority of guys that you get aren't going to be that way. And I think established major league guys are the guys that, they had Hunter Pence, an established major league guy, and they basically let him go. Why? Next half hour, it's wonderful to have a losing mentality on our World Cup soccer team at the top.
I can't wait for that segment.
Unbelievable. I like his honesty. No, I don't. I'm an American. I don't accept what he says.
I want to win.
Is he realistic? Yes. I mean, realistically, okay, we know that. But you don't go public with it, Jurgen Klinsmann. loser.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday. Some call it the Chateau. Others refer to it as the Sunbury Motors Studio. They are one and the same, boys and girls. I'm just telling you. All right. Jurgen Klinsmann is the head coach of the United States soccer team. He has stated publicly that the United States cannot win the World Cup this year. Okay. Now, in the world of realism, is that correct? Sure it is. We are an up-and-coming group soccer-wise and not in the same league yet with the Brazils, France's and Germany's of the world. But do I need my coach telling the media and the world that? Or do I need my coach to go out there and say, look, you know, we know it's difficult. That's why it's the World Cup. We'll just play it out. Like my team a lot. We'll see what happens.
Basically, he just told his team, you can't win.
Exactly. He has just told his team, you can't win. Well, fabulous. Well, guess what? Okay. Thank goodness when it came time to scale the cliff 70 years ago at Normandy, they didn't have the same attitude. Okay. I mean, thank goodness. Yeah. Herb Brooks walks in against the Soviets in 1980s. I'm sorry, you can't win.
That would have changed the whole movie.
Can't win. I mean, the movie turns out differently. But I'm saying, this is the guy that's coaching the United States of America? I'm sorry. That bothers me. Now, again, I will concede the point. Okay? The United States is not a world power in soccer. A lot of people think the United States is pointing toward 2018. Fine. But in order to win this thing, you have to get through, I think, seven matches, I think, something like that, to win it. The enormity of it's incredible. The NCAA men's basketball tournament. I always told you how Dean Smith broke it down into like, hey, let's win the Syracuse tournament. Let's win the Meadowlands tournament. Now let's win the Indianapolis tournament. He broke it down into two-game sets. More realistic. And one of the things that makes sports great, and you want to know why sports right now is the single most marketable television commodity there is in the United States. When you watch, for example, what I consider to be a really good show, NCIS, let's take that as an example. Excellent cast, great character development, good storylines. My opinion. Some of you may not share it, some of you may share it. All right, but NCIS. 8-9 times out of 10, within the hour, it is wrapped up and taken care of in one form or another. There's a formula to it. In sports, there's no formula. One of the things that's made sports on television so great is the unpredictability of it. The unpredictability. And I don't need a coach from the United States of America telling the world we can't do something. This country has been built on always being able to do something. Always. I don't care whether it's scaling the cliffs at Normandy, getting off the beach at Normandy, or having Steve Ballmer become a multi-billionaire to buy the Los Angeles Clippers because at Microsoft they were able to do something. My father worked at Pratt & Whitney. My father worked in experimental on 747 engines. Guess what? Okay? Can-do attitude. This country is built on a can-do attitude. And I'll tell you, the three words that bother me so much today more than anything else, the new normal. I don't accept that ever. The new normal is for leadership losers who can't get it done, so they try to invent a new level for us. That's not the United States. That's not what Americans do. The new normal. The new normal? Take the new normal. I'll assign two important letters to your new normal, B and S. And I don't want a coach for the United States going out there and telling the world we can't win something. I don't care how realistic it is. I don't want him saying we're going to win. But I want a better answer than that. Because guess what? Oh, maybe in private they're all confident. Every single one of those players has to go out now and has to answer questions about his statement. Really? That's the person we have coaching the United States? A person that doesn't think they can win? What are you paying him for? What are you paying him for? And it wasn't that the United States hockey team in 1980 just beat the Soviets. They beat the professionals from Finland. They beat the professionals from the Czech Republic. They beat the professionals from Germany. They beat all of them. I mean, you don't go in there with the idea like, oh, we're just going to hang in there and compete. I work around achievers all the time. Okay? For 40-plus years, I watched Joe Paterno believe he was going to win and impart that to his team. And guess what? They won a lot. Every day he told them that. He did not walk out into practice and go into a press conference and say, I don't know, we can't win. Now, he may have praised the other team, told everybody how tough it was going to be and so forth. Okay, but he never once went out and said, we can't win. Not one time. I mean, in this world, a town of State College, which is 36,000, has a 107,000-seat stadium. You're telling me the can-do attitude doesn't exist here? Okay. How would you feel as a Penn State fan if James Franklin walked out and said, you know, might as well not go to Ireland. We can't win. Really? Patrick Chambers tells his team before the two Ohio State games this year, no, we haven't beaten Ohio State since 2002. We can't win. Really? Ended up sweeping Ohio State this year. You don't go in. You know, you have to qualify to get there. This would be, to me, the equivalent of Chip Kelly before the playoffs last year saying, I'm sorry, we can't win. If he said that, how would the fans of Philadelphia react?
We got this far, but this is as far as we can go.
Hey, we can't win. Mike Tomlin, we can't win. Really? That's the attitude of the head coach of the United States soccer team? Now, we know realistically, Brazil, France, Germany, England. Okay, yeah. But remember back in 1994, the United States beat Colombia in the Rose Bowl, right? And it was, and the reason they won was because of an own goal scored by Colombia, and they ended up killing that guy. The big story. But things, my point is, things happen. You win a couple times, you get a little bit of confidence, things change. You don't know. It's why sports is so great. There is the level of unpredictability about it. I mean, unpredictable. If the Columbus Blue Jackets coach goes out before they face the Penguins in the playoffs, well, you know, I mean, really, we're just happy to be here. I mean, we can't win. Well, they almost did win. They stretched them out about as far as they could. The LA Kings won the Stanley Cup 2 years ago, and they were the eighth seed. They barely got in. I think Daryl Sutter said, well, we're the eighth seed. We can't win. Yeah, 2 months later, they're skating around. Hey, look, they gave us hardware. We won. They have LeBron James. The Dallas Mavericks can't win. They have Kobe Bryant. The Celtics can't win. Okay? Look at over there. Colin Kaepernick. I mean, the Niners. You know, they're a young dynasty, the whole thing. Ravens can't win. Okay? Red Sox finished last in 2012. Finished last. Can't win. What the heck were they holding on October on their own field? I'm trying to think that. Well, what was that? I'm just saying there's an unpredictability. I don't need the coach of the United States telling everybody the United States can't win. Even though I know that the level between the two is completely different. In public, do we need to hear that statement? And do the players have to now answer questions about their own coach saying that they can't win? Do you need that? Is that who I want running the show? To quote the two golfers in the Aflac commercial, the big fat no. Okay, we'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Absolutely. That's exactly the attitude I want from the American coach.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can't win.
Okay, fine.
Again, I'm not saying he's wrong. That's not my point. My point is you don't articulate that attitude in public.
How about it's really going to be a tough, tough tournament?
Well,
everything, you know, a lot of these teams are more talented than we are, but we're going to actually come out there and do everything we can. You know, something.
Well, he does say, hey, look, we're no longer overmatched. Hey, now, he did say that. Now, okay. Now, I can accept that. That's fine.
Wait. He said we're no longer overmatched, but we're still going to lose.
Right. Well, there's no way we can win the whole thing. Like, yeah, okay.
You know, I think back, were the women favored to win the World Cup when they did?
I believe they were, yeah.
Were they? I didn't think they were because I remember it being a surprise.
No, I believe they were. The United States women's soccer program has been a superior.
No, I know it's been better than the men's, yeah. I just didn't remember if they were supposed to have won that or not. But still, It's like, you know, it's like Al Michaels. Do you believe in miracles? No.
Right. So I'm just saying, I can't. I'm sorry, I can't abide by that attitude. I just can't. I mean, my respect for him. I mean, supposedly he's done really well. I guess he coached Germany to a third place finish and so forth. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, great, fabulous. That's fine. You know, I can't do what he does, but then again, I'd be a little bit smarter in the press conference than him, too.
Right.
It's obviously public relations is not his strong suit. The Big 12 says no expansion, didn't even come up, wasn't even brought up, was not even discussed. BYU wants to go. They want to get in there. They do. And so does UConn. So does UConn. But I don't know what the meanwhile, Chase Utley's still not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but he's still a Philly right now.
At this hour.
We're going to have Utley watch.
No, but you know what I mean? He is, of all the guys that they have, look, here's the other part. If I'm Philly's ownership, do I have the confidence of Ruben Amaro?
Nope.
That will change this?
Nope. I didn't even have to let you finish that to give you the answer to that. No.
I mean, that's a big part of this. I mean, that is a big part of this. Because when you look at what the Phillies have done. Now, Howard's homegrown, Utley's homegrown, Rollins is homegrown, Ruiz is homegrown, Ashy's homegrown, Brown's homegrown. They traded for Revere. They signed Marlon Byrd.
Okay.
Hamels is homegrown. They've gone through the signing song and dance with Lee. The Pence thing, the Hunter Pence deal is still the one where I sit back and I look at it and I say to myself, okay, what was the purpose behind that?
Let me know if you ever figure it out.
I don't know what the purpose behind... Now, the purpose behind acquiring him, I completely got. They were trying to win it, and boy, do I respect that. Dealing him out? I don't get it. And the Phillies have a really, really good TV contract. The Phillies have a really, really good radio contract. And they have a ballpark that's spectacular and is a revenue producer. So the Phillies are not a poor small market team. Don't act like a poor small market team, but be smart about what you do. I mean, not everybody's going to be like the Yankees or the Angels. I mean, the Angels have overspent. They have the return with which the Angels have had. Let's face it, the Angels. I mean, you know what the odd thing about the Angels is? For a team that spent tons of money to get Pujols, spent tons of money to get Josh Hamilton, their best player is a homegrown guy. And Mike Trout. He's the best player they have. I mean, and when you look at the Pujols signing, signing Pujols makes sense. He's been a productive player for a long time, but it does not make sense at 10 years, $225 million. That's lunacy. Now, you're not going to sign Hunter Pence to 10 years, $225 million, but you could have signed him to a four-year deal that was, at minimum, eight figures. And you could have been set in right field for the next 4 or 5 years with a good, solid, middle-of-the-order player. Instead, they made this deal, and I have seen no production out of this deal whatsoever. This is why I constantly talk, Kevin, about an important part of evaluation is not sabermetrics. It can help you in your evaluation, but the eyeball test is an important part of evaluation, where you physically look at somebody and say to yourself, dude can play.
Don't make it your only way to look at it.
Right. Now, you can back it up with, okay, this kind of backs up what I'm seeing here when you look at the numbers. Because when you do what they're doing, that's how you get the last place. Some of it's bad luck.